IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I am Arjun and I am a research analyst at the Takshashila Institution. And I have with me today Pranay, and we're going to talk about semiconductors, especially India's role in it and what India can do to make itself more self-sufficient in the semiconductor industry.
Arjun, wait, did you work in a semiconductor company before? Did you ever think that semiconductors would reach the geopolitical struggle and people would be discussing it outside your work life as well?
Never. You know, when I was in a semiconductor industry, I was there only for about 7 months. But the thing is, I always had this view on how India is kind of dependent on Taiwan. I mean, not even India. I mean, I was working in a company which used to send all its chips to Taiwan to get it fabricated. So they depended on it so much that the entire process after design and verification and all, the final product had to be given from Taiwan. So that I knew, but until I never thought about it in a way that the supply chain would be very concentrated in the hands of a few countries. So once I came here and I read about the geopolitical angle to semiconductors, that's when I kind of had this epiphany of how this can actually be like a power struggle between states. So that was my reading into geopolitics of semiconductors.
Yeah, so I had been working in this industry a decade ago, and back then the common thing that engineers used to rue about is that, hey, everyone talks about Microsoft and Facebook and all the software things, but no one talks about semiconductors. The only recognizable thing about a semiconductor was this Intel Inside sticker on laptops, right? And that was probably the only semiconductor company people knew of. And but outside the realm, for example, you were talking about TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation, which has now become so important and it has been taken notice across the world. It manufactures nearly 70% of contract manufactured chips across the world. And no one knew about that outside the industry and a few people like you who were interacting with that in your professional capacity, right? So then on, the world has moved on a lot. And now I guess it was, this supply chain is structured as such that it is a very, it's a hyper-globalized supply chain. When things are working fine, they are working so smoothly that you don't even need to know who's doing what, right? It just, things fall into place as they do. But when things go wrong, that's when we realize that the supply chain is not resilient. There are lots of bottlenecks, and these bottlenecks can be used by specific countries to influence the technological development of other countries. And that's where we are in 2021.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So the pandemic led to a global chip shortage. And that triggered a whole, you know, events and discussions on what might happen to the industry and what might, how the industry might change. So, I mean, the US-China trade war happened like from 3 years when Trump was in the White House. But the chip shortage actually accelerated the discussions on semiconductors being this very, very important part of the global supply chain. So how is it structured right now, and what is the possible outcomes of this? Like what do you foresee in the coming 5 to 10 years? How will it change? Or
first thing to note is that the supply chain shortage hasn't happened because there was no demand. right? That's what has happened in many other industries, right? Like, so real estate sort of suffered because there was no demand for the products that they had on offer, right? But in semiconductors, it was the opposite, right? So initially, there was a dip in demand, which, because of which automobiles, etc., these were one of the consumers of semiconductor chips. They sort of said that we are not going to place any more orders because we don't see things are going to come back soon, right? But, and we had these vaccines and the rebound was much sharper than they had expected or budgeted for. So we had two effects happening. One, that automobiles sort of had reduced demand and they went back a year later saying that, you know, we now want chips because people are buying cars after all. Simultaneously, there was in fact an increase in demand because all of us were working at home. You needed better servers, you needed better data centers, you needed better routers, you needed better laptops, right? So these are also the companies which place which need semiconductor chips, and as we've already discussed, the manufacturers which finally produce those chips are a select few in the world. So all of these demands across industries, whether it is laptops, routers or automotives, go to a select few manufacturers, right? So what happened was the demand of other products increased. So the limited slots that are available to produce these semiconductor manufacturing chips, this is a really complex process, right? You need to foresee demand, you need to have capacity to be able to produce it. So all this capacity was locked by laptops and the consumer equipment that we all need to work from home. So when these automotive folks came back and the demand rose, there were no slots available, there were no wafers available, there is no capacity available in order to, for you to do automobile chip manufacturing. Now that is what led to this, right? And now what we see is this might spread to other sectors as well. It has already spread to medical devices and it might spread to some other sectors as well. And in response, a lot of countries are trying to do manufacturing by on their own self, right? So they are trying to attract TSMC to US, to Japan. India has also been trying to do that. But it is not an easy thing to do. It will take many years for this to evolve. So what, maybe a year from now, the situation will ease. There will be at least a few more centers which will come up in Arizona. We are seeing news of a couple of new manufacturing facilities coming up. So that will sort of reduce the current burden which exists. So what I see going ahead is that everyone is now talking about a resilient supply chain, right? Earlier, the focus was not on resilience. The focus was more on comparative advantage and reducing the cost as much as possible. And that's why you had all this brilliant supply chain which came into being that led to a lot of developments, etc. But now, with the geopolitical tensions coming up, with the fact that China and Taiwan relationship has been worsening, there is a realization that you need to have a backup. You need to have single sources, not what you can rely on. You need to have at least a couple of other sources. So what I see is first that there will be a diversification. There will be new manufacturing facilities coming up in different countries, right? That is one. But that won't solve the problem entirely. Because you still need manufacturing at trailing edge nodes, say for broadband chips, etc. So those are still concentrated in one place. So you would need supplies to come up in many, many more places. That's the first thing. The second thing, you will see a lot of fabless companies that are coming up in China, even in India. So that will be a second sort of movement that you will see. And the third sector, apart from manufacturing and design, is assembly, test and marking and packaging. So that also is a very labor intensive industry. And I think, again, because it is labor intensive, margins are low, it is a place where India has an advantage, and there could be more companies which come and diversify from the current base in Taiwan and East Asia. So this is broadly how I see it. Technologically, I think there might be semiconductor composites or other products which might come up. We've been depending on silicon for too long, and it's becoming increasingly costlier, increasingly more human effort intensive to get marginal gains in performance, right? So the Moore's law, etc., which we talked about, to meet that Moore's law now, the amount of money you want to put in, the incremental developments have need a lot more effort, right? So there has always been a desire to see, are there other sort of elements, other semiconductors which we can use. So there's a lot of research happening on GaN fabs, etc. So we might see a move towards that as well. So new manufacturing, more diversification, and a lot of design focus across the world.
Right. So that's interesting.
Before we go on, let's just take a short break and we'll be right back. Welcome back.
So one thing we want to focus on is about India's role, right? So how will India actually feature in this whole geopolitical angle to semiconductors? And recently, India and Taiwan are looking to anchor deal to set up a manufacturing plant here. This has been in the works for India for almost 3 to 4 decades now. I mean, like, it's not a new concept. They want manufacturing to come up in India, but it hasn't happened till now. Do you think it will happen this time, or what should India focus on to make it happen? So that's something that we want to see, India become more resilient in the semiconductor industry. So what do you think India should focus on to make that happen?
Yeah, so actually I find the focus on semiconductor manufacturing a bit overblown. I don't think just because we have one manufacturing facility, somehow our complete strategic dependence on other countries will go away. We know that it requires a huge amount of investment, and it requires close to $12 billion if you want to manufacture at the leading edge nodes like 5 nanometers, right? So that is a really huge sum which you have to keep investing, because as you move from 5 nanometers to 2 nanometers, the changes are not incremental. They are significantly higher. So it is not a game that I think India should play. There are opportunity costs to each of these investments, right? If we are going to spend $12 billion on semiconductor manufacturing, we are not spending those $12 billion on something else, which might be more important. So what I think is, on manufacturing, we should just focus on trailing edge nodes. So there are a lot of nodes like 45 nanometers, 65 nanometers, which will reduce significant part of our dependence, not entirely, but significant. And those won't cost as much as $12 or $10 billion, right? So idea is, one, can we just focus on walking before we start running, right? And can we just look at 65 nanometers, build it, run it, see how things work, look at specialized fabs like analog fabs or fabs which will be important for 5G broadband communication. So all this can happen at a lower cost. So that is one thing that I think on manufacturing we should focus on. Second, to reduce the entire dependency on, say, China or Taiwan, and look at it as an effort in building resilience, I think the role of foreign policy is really important. So what we should think of is, can, say, Quad countries or many countries together who think on similar lines, who have similar values, come together and build a supply chain which operates seamlessly in that bubble, right? And that's why we've been talking about what happened in the Quad. And the Quad has already thought of semiconductors as one focus area. Now, that is a positive step because, as I said, you want to reduce the dependence on China, but you can't do that alone. So multilateralism is, in a sense, a necessity and not a choice. So work with these Quad countries, set up a consortium so that you could have, say, 5 nanometer development happening in the US and, say, 65 nanometers happening in India. So you could diversify. You will also reduce the geographic risks which exist because of having everything in one place, you know. So that is the second thing. The third one, I think you've been researching, Arjun, about what are the previous efforts that have been done in India, right? And what we see is a lot of those failures have happened not because of what is in the semiconductor space, but the larger business and trade environments, right? So you can add to this, but I guess that is where we should focus on. So can we harmonize our intellectual property regimes with the other countries? Can we reduce trade barriers, right? For example, one of the news reports is that Taiwan and India, even in the current deal which is being talked about, they have asked for reduction of import barriers so that they can import a lot of manufacturing equipment for the final chip to be manufactured here, right? So you need to have a reduction in import duties. You need to harmonize the trade environment, the business environment, right? Doing business is still very tough in India. And if you are making a commitment of billions of dollars and for a product which you need to keep manufacturing year on year for many years to make it economic sense, you need to have better business environment, right? So those are the things that India needs to work on. And that if we do that, then automatically manufacturing will happen. The fourth thing is India's comparative advantage lies in semiconductor design, right? Both you and I have worked in firms which do semiconductor design. They are not Indian, owned, but they do that manufacturing they do the development in India. And I think there have been a lot of offshoots because of that. This semiconductor design in India started way back in 1985, right? So we have now close to 30 years of seasoned engineers who have worked across the entire design cycle, and they are skilled enough to now start their own companies, to start new intellectual property development in India, right? So that is something we need to encourage. That is something we need to focus on, because that's where our strength lies. So why do something just because China or US is doing it? This is something which we can do. We have the human capital, we have the engineers who can do this. So just encourage them. Again, business environment, if it is smoother there, we can have more design, more intellectual property coming out of India. So that's what I would look at from an Indian perspective.
That's really cool. So as you said, our comparative advantage lies in our ability to design the semiconductor chip. And also the fact that there are other parts of the supply chain than just design and manufacturing. There's also packaging, there's also testing and assembly. So India could always, you know, enter those fields also. Manufacturing is important. And as you said, it might be overblown to an extent right now. So in that sense, does foreign policy also help India to get into these other sectors? Like, I just saw that Modi had a meeting with the Qualcomm CEO. We do not know what he discussed. But again, this can also mean that they might be encouraged to set up like testing facilities and assembly and packaging facilities here.
See, Qualcomm won't do that because it is a fabless company, right? So it won't be bothered with assembly, test and packaging. But yes, I think Qualcomm would be interested, for example, in expanding its design, right? So design facilities in India. So what we want is that the cutting edge of all designs should happen in India. I think it already does. I think there are some unverifiable stats, but what in the news reports that most around 90% of all chips that go out into the world, they are touched by an Indian design firm, right? So there will be some part of it which will be done in India. So we already have that expertise, and I think doubling down on that would be a useful thing. So that's why I think focusing on fabless is also a great step. We should not just be focused on manufacturing and on a particular node. That node will become old 3 years later, right? So that's why I think Karnataka government, for example, has started a semiconductor fabless accelerator lab. That's a good initiative, because fabless companies face certain issues. For example, you know that the software which is used for design, because you have to place billions of transistors on a millimeter square chip. So you can't do that manually. You have to do it using specialized tools. And these tools are called EDA, right? These EDA tools are really costly. Again, there is a sort of an oligopoly of three players, American companies, which dominate the market. So you again need some help that can be provided so that fabless companies can enter into the space without making the huge upfront investment in licenses of EDA. So the Karnataka government initiative tries to do that. It tries to give licenses to a set of fabless companies for a particular period of time. So these are certain things that we need to focus on. And if we do that, then our fabless sector will again get a boost. And that's a sector which can grow organically in India.
That's very true. I mean, what we should do is just play to our strengths and take any opportunity which comes our way in the other sectors also. Like, I mean, if Taiwan and TSMC want to build a manufacturing plant here, that we shouldn't discourage them from doing it, rather than help them and ensure that we, like, our weaknesses, like, as you said, there is a lot of business kind of, it's hard to do business here, and we need to find a way to get past that and stuff. So that's something we should always think about. So I just want to end it by, like, an optimistic note, right? So India has its own strength. India can take part in the other parts of the supply chain. And India can also be a place wherein different kinds of designing processes are developed. So what I want to, like, finally end it on is just how India can collaborate with other countries specifically. Like, we already mentioned Taiwan, we already mentioned US, so and the Quad. So India as should semiconductors become a very important foreign policy objective in the current climate. So that is just one last.
Yeah. Point. So no, I think broadly what I would like to say is that we need a big shift in mindset of our foreign policy makers. And the mindset shift is this, you know, the fact that technological self-sufficiency is a chimera, right? It's not an aim that is worth tracking, because it's not possible even for a country like US. But we are still thinking in those old industrial policy ways, because we saw that, oh, in 1950s, we could build a steel industry, which was only Indian owned and everything happened in India. So can we do that in semiconductors as well? I think that is not the right way to approach this. The technological the technological industry has moved on from national indigenization to global supply chains, right? So everything, whether you talk about AI, whether you talk about semiconductors, a lot of these technologies depend on cross-border flows of materials, equipments, and human capital, right? So if you are going to think that we can stop that and do everything on our own, that's not going to happen. So I think it's very important to realize that because technological power will be a significant part of the national power going ahead, we need to sort of target all our instruments towards increasing the technological power, right? And one instrument that a state has, it's foreign policy. So can we use foreign policy also to think of this allied leadership on a bunch of technologies, not by India alone, but through a partnership with countries which think on similar lines, right? So it doesn't need to be only Quad, right? So maybe for AI, we could collaborate with EU, or we could collaborate with some other countries. For semiconductors, I think Quad makes sense, because each of these countries have comparative advantage that plug each other's weaknesses, and already they have a target. They have a political sort of inclination to move ahead on certain things. So that's why Quad as a starting point. But we can start with the Quad, expand that bubble, include other countries if they wish to, and for other technologies, target other players as well, right? So, but the shift in mindset is important, that you need to think not of technological self-sufficiency, but multilateral cooperation on certain technological aspects. So I think that is one thing I think is really important.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, what we are always batting for is like an intersection of technology and foreign policy. So hopefully the government, recognizes the importance of these emerging and critical technologies in the coming decade and works towards building alliances to at least maintain its presence in these technologies. So I think we can end it there. Hopefully we can come back and see what India will do in the future regarding semiconductors specifically and other technologies. But for now, I guess we have to just wait and see how India can build on its strength and use its own comparative advantages to build its semiconductor industry. So thank you all for listening into this episode of All Things Policy. See you guys soon.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.